pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Turned on there.
I am, thank you.
Yeah. We got the real deal here tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I told her down and do a blank stare. Yeah, that's a rerun. Roll call.
Councilor Anderson?
Here.
Councilor Lazier?
Here.
Councilor Stone?
Here.
Councilor Egbert?
Here.
Councilor Boggs?
Here.
Councilor Meyer?
Here.
Mayor McKnight?
Here. Introduction of media. Is there any media here tonight? All right. Announcements. Please be sure to sign the sign-in sheet if you haven't already. Anyone wishing to speak before the City Council tonight on any subject matter will need to fill out a speaker form and turn it into the recorder. Forms are available on the sign-in table in the back of the room. Public comment, agenda items only. The purpose of public comment period is to allow citizens to present information or raise issues regarding agenda items only. There will be a time at the end of the meeting for citizens to speak about off-agenda items. A time limit of 3 minutes per citizen shall apply. All citizens must come up to the microphone. Please state name and address. I don't have any form, so. On to presentation, Chamber of Commerce.
Good evening, members of the council and Mr. Mayor, city staff. I'm going to pass out my report. Those, if you pass those down.
I think I did. Okay.
Just, I don't know if there's anything that jumps out for questions while you're looking at it. I'm going to go ahead and just give you the rundown. We had a great pre-Flag Day party event a week ago Friday. It was very successful. We had great media coverage. I don't know if you got to see the clip on KPIC and a little blurb in the paper. They look really good out there. Aaron and I are coordinating getting those moved into place this week, and the media indicated that they wanted to be there when we did that so they can get a picture of those down central and give it some more exposure. So we're pretty excited about that. Had two businesses actually sign up to sponsor them that day, and I had a lot of interest generated. People said, you know, get back to me, send me some flag stories that we could sponsor that aren't taken yet, those kind of things. So we had quite a bit of interest, and we're very excited about that also. Graffiti weekend is now less than 3 weeks away, so we're really gearing up for that and getting flyers printed, maps finalized, and it should be a great day, so make sure that you're in town for the street fair. Another item of, well, interest and fun things is that we have got some new street signs coming. Okay, so this is what the top ones are going to look like. Obviously, you can't stack these, so the bottom ones are going to be flat without the logo and the round hump here. And all of the central street signs are actually going to be on the bottom, so those will be flat, and then the cross streets will have these on them, and they're a little bigger and easier to see, and hopefully they should make it easier for visitors to find their way around. We've got them coming from Front Street to Umatilla on Central, and the cost of those is approximately $2,800. We're not sure what the freight's going to be on those, is why I'm saying approximate. And then the city had money in their budget for street signs, and we also had talked about doing this, so we're going to split that with the city. So you'll be seeing those coming in hopefully in a couple weeks. I don't know if you got a chance to see it when the one was there on, was it Willamette Street, Vicki?
Yeah.
But it looks pretty nice. And we also have, well, we got new visitor center signs. We had people complaining that they didn't know where the visitor center was, so talked to the Lions and they let us put that sign below that. I think that looks pretty nice, fits on pretty well. And then we also have a new sign to put down at exit 135. So when you come off there at the stop sign, it won't be in the gravel part. It will be over probably right there before you get into the orchard. because we don't really want it in the way when people are driving through there. We don't want it to get hit. We want it kind of out of the flow there. But it's really a nice sign that says 2 miles to downtown, and it has the flag monument and a few other things on there. And so that should be going up here pretty soon, as soon as we coordinate with Danny Lang as to exactly where he wants it. That's what we've got going right now. Any questions, comments?
Looks nice down there.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad. Were you able to drive by when the flags were in the monument? Yeah, that looked pretty impressive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why I thought they were going to be in there when all the flags were out for the Army celebration.
Army celebration?
Yeah, they were on the streets.
Or Flag Day?
Oh, yeah, on Day. Sunday, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
I'd like to for this. Do kind of
troops.
Is your mic
an acknowledgement for the...
I don't know, is that on?
Hello? I'd like to do at least some sort of acknowledgement, because I don't people ever remember it. This is all Councilor Edwards' principal idea that we stole, so he deserves some element of credit for this.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Since you were discussing my salary tonight, I thought this was a good idea.
Mark that down.
That's your night. Yeah, the open house is great. I mean, that was just a nice event.
Yeah,
it
was. Yeah.
Any idea where you're going to put the ones that are there?
Actually, we do. Vicki and I just did a little walkabout the end of last week, and I don't know if she brought the schematic. I know that I didn't, but there will be one in front of the library. There'll be one in front of City Hall. There'll be one... Oh, actually two in Central Park. So one on the train corner. We're going to keep it out of the eye line of sight for signs on that fence, but right one over there. And then one on the corner diagonal across from that. There will be one at the footbridge when you're headed, you know, that's just right back here. Yeah, one over there.
Yeah, but there was actually
three at the park. Okay, I'm sorry. But, oh yeah, one underneath the reader board sign. Those three.
So they're going to be off central a little bit too.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, off central a little bit. But I think they'll look really good. And if you realize that the flags that go in those monuments are actually the flags that are on the plaque. So the Jesse Ross flag has the circle of stars. They correspond. So keeping those inventory and straight will be a fun little challenge, but we do have the numbers on the pole, so hopefully that'll work.
Until it wears off.
Yeah. This Sharpie, they never wear off.
Yeah, big Sharpie.
Unless it's on your hand, then it never wears off. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So on the council business, we have consent agenda, minutes from the June 8, 2015 regular meeting. Is there a motion to approve?
I move to approve.
I'll second. Moved and second to approve the consent agenda as presented. Any discussion? Go ahead and vote.
Councilor Anderson?
Aye.
Councilor Lazier?
Aye.
Councilor Stone?
Aye.
Councilor Egbert?
Aye.
Councilor Boggs?
Aye.
Councilor Meyer?
Aye.
Mayor McKnight?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Councilor McKnight? Boggs doesn't say that. She does.
On the action items, general business, we have resolution 2015.10, budget adjustment for 2014-15 fiscal year. Call for staff report, finance director.
Yes, council members and mayor, I have three more budget adjustments for the year to keep us in line with Oregon budget law. As explained in there, there's more legal fees than I initially had anticipated, so we need to adjust that up. The Dial-A-Ride Fund needs an adjustment there, as does the Public Works Operation Fund for personal purposes.
What expenses were Dial-A-Ride that we didn't anticipate?
They have the call center that they, we have temporary employee, or we have an employment service, and they spending a lot more hours, you know, manning the phones, and they're the dispatch for the whole county, not just Sullivan.
point that I thought. So is that going to be reoccurring every year?
No, we have a set budget. Dennis Panero with the county sits down with Chief Sanfilippo regularly on a quarterly basis, and they plan out how many hours they're gonna man the station, the call center.
We get reimbursed. Yeah.
Does it cost the city?
I just want to make sure we're accurate when we say no, it shouldn't be. The problem is a good one. The problem is that the ridership has increased so dramatically, we added a third call center position at the call center. That's the good news. The bad news is it costs more money. The good news is it's all grant reimbursed. And Dennis Pinero and I watch this. We look at the numbers. When we need to increase staff, we do to accommodate the ridership. So we may have to do the same thing next year if the ridership continues to go up.
Okay, but so the ridership is going to determine the grant for next year. So
the ridership will determine the number of hours we expend in the call center for staff,
okay.
Temporary staff.
Okay.
We don't want to lose riders, so we're going to keep the staffing up to maintain the ridership or increase it.
Okay. Thank you.
When does this get repaid?
On a quarterly basis, we get the grant money on a quarterly basis, and part of this will be a drawdown of the fund balance.
Okay, I have a question on the Public Works COLAs too.
Yes.
Were there additional expenses besides just COLAs?
They have overtime that wasn't planned, okay. and I never can in some of their health insurance related costs.
And then I really have a problem with our city attorney bills.
I mean, people quit calling him, it wouldn't be so high.
Pardon me?
I said people would call or email him, it might not be so high. I move to approve resolution 2015-10.
Is there any more discussion?
No, a second.
Are you getting?
I do have some more discussion.
Yeah.
They've more than doubled from 2012-13. So in 2 years, they've gone up 128%. And if we make it on the finance committee meeting, we could see what's going on with some of this stuff.
Well, in this particular case, it was just a perfect storm. We had two union agreements come open at the same time. We then had the fire, and you seen the outcome of that in executive sessions. And then we've had a number of intense and litigious legal personnel actions that required far more. So it required attorney consulting at a greater level. I wouldn't anticipate in the future, now that we know that my contract isn't tied to that, needing the attorney as heavily. Generally, myself and two department heads would do the bulk of the negotiating and seek consultative advice from the attorneys when needed. So I would say that there'd be, going forward after we finish this next agreement, we can see savings. Can't anticipate the personnel actions when they come up, but looking on the horizon, that is solved. So. With fire, two agreements being resolved, and the personnel actions completed, I would say that this was an anomaly for a year and should level off. But that comes with a caveat that anything could happen.
So this gets us up to date with what had happened in the last couple months or
yes,
so.
Anything else? Karen, are you good, or do you have? Okay. Then moved and seconded. If there's no more discussion, go ahead and vote.
Councilor Anderson?
Aye.
Councilor Lazier?
Aye.
Councilor Stone?
Aye.
Councilor Egbert?
Aye.
Councilor Boggs?
Aye.
Councilor Meyer?
Aye.
Mayor McKnight?
Aye.
Motion carries.
onto the overlay bid award for 2015-16 fiscal year. Call for staff report. Nick Mead.
Bid openings took place on
June 4th.
June what?
4th.
4th. Stanked up. For the overlays for this upcoming year, and Branton Street and Umatilla Street, Branton West from Central up to 6th, and Umatilla East Central up to East 4th. There was two bids received. The low bid was Neck River, $164,167. Of that, $41,140 is sidewalk work, so it works into our budget, which we have $132,000.
Which streets get in the sidewalks? Both of them?
Umatilla is getting, Branton is getting some too.
So do we have to do anything with the ditches up there, or are we just building sidewalks along the...
Umatilla doesn't have ditches.
I was thinking there was a ditch on one side of that, because we were looking at a grant to widen that one time, and Dan said that they wanted to leave the ditches open.
The left side might have ditch, now that you say that.
So it's just going up one side of the street.
It's getting sidewalked, or is it just getting the returns at the intersection?
It's getting returns.
Okay, but it's not getting sidewalk along the whole length of the street.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think this is just the returns. It's 7 returns.
Oh, okay.
7 on Umatilla and then 1 on...
1 on Brent.
Yeah, so 8 total.
Right.
Okay.
Is that all you got, Vicki?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I have a question. Regarding Wes's question that he asked, I think it was Wes, who picks these streets? And you said the Planning Commission?
Planning Commission also acts as your transportation committee.
Yeah.
So the Public Works Operations Supervisor, Superintendent Aaron, went to the Planning Commission along with the engineer and went over the list of streets that qualify for these, and then they asked him to make a recommendation to them. They accepted his recommendation.
Okay.
On that plan, because it looked like Aaron kind of made recommendations based on Dyer's street improvement plan that they did in 2010.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do we plan on having that updated on a regular basis, or are we going to do that ourselves? The update kind of like keep track of the streets that we improve, the date we do it, and then kind of just prioritize
that way?
We will
be working to put that together.
Okay.
Yeah. But that, I think it's 5 years old.
Yeah, the plan. Yeah.
When you total that up, you got 133 budgeted, 59 and 41. So that's 233,000. And the bid came in at 167. Is there money going to be left over if that money was budgeted? Or because on the next line it says up to 15% increase through change orders. So are we like last year where we had extra money from the slurry seal and we decided to go further? Or?
I'm not sure we'll be able to go further with the overlays, but I can throw that out there if you'd like. If you want to add that in there. I'm not sure they're going to go any further, though, because they're going to end at 6th Street.
So we may be able to transfer that to what left to slurry seal or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like that idea. That way you give a little bit of contingency money in case something happens with the sidewalk.
Is there a motion to approve the overlay bid for the 15-16 fiscal year?
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Move and second. Any more discussion? Vote. Mm-hmm.
Councillor Anderson?
Aye.
Sorry. Councillor Lazier?
Aye.
Councillor Stone?
Aye.
Councillor Egbert?
Aye.
Councillor Boggs?
Aye.
Councillor Meyer?
Aye.
Mayor McKnight?
Aye.
Motion carries.
On to the slurry seal bid award.
Slurry seals were open the same day. There was three bids. The low bidder was VSS Slurry at $36,575. We have $41,000 in the budget.
Have you worked with VSS before? Or have you done any research and their recommendations?
I personally haven't, but the engineer was very familiar with them.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a motion.
Well, I have just a question. Why are the notices of intent to award sent out before the council approval? Is that just the way you do it?
Yeah, I don't know.
You do. That way you can keep the ball rolling and keep it keep it moving. You don't do a notice of award, but you do an intent to award, which that way it begins the protest period and all that stuff for the other bidders.
Okay.
You're not going to charge for that.
I move to approve the slurry seal 2015-16 as presented.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any more discussion?
I'd like to see the 2010 survey or list of streets we got maybe brought back for an update. If anybody has traveled on Taylor, I think that's something that's deteriorating really, really fast. And slurry seal or something, maybe, you know, you might be able to save that or at least postpone it for a while. But that's it's getting a lot more traffic and there's spots on it that's really bad.
You're right.
If we do that, should we have that done in-house instead of?
I don't know. I mean, there was a story in the league in the City County magazine about Portland. Portland is doing a new slurry seal where they mix rubber in it, and they go in and clean the street and put this stuff down, and they said it works really, really well because the rubber impregnates the cracks. And actually seals the streets. And said that Portland had gone and done away with all the other stuff, and they bought the equipment to do this because it works so well. And I don't know if there's anybody local doing this, but I mean, it may be something worth looking at.
Okay.
More discussion? Go ahead and vote.
Councillor Anderson?
Aye.
Councillor Lazier?
Aye.
Councillor Stone?
Aye.
Councillor Egbert?
Aye.
Councillor Boggs?
Aye.
Councillor Meyer?
Aye.
Mayor McKnight?
Aye.
Motion carries.
On to the City Manager salary. Staff report. Debbie.
Well, there's not a whole much more to add after the staff report that I gave you. So you've had two council meetings to look at that. So if you have any questions.
Okay.
Would you like for me to make a motion?
Yeah, I was going to say. Does somebody want to make a motion, at least for discussion purposes? You're good at that, Tom.
Well, what I would like is that at no time should the head honcho make less money than the people he's supervising. So I know there was a salary range to consider in the 85 to 95,000 range, which is still a little low, but I was looking at a 7% over what his highest department heads make. Keep it a constant where you don't have to keep going back and tweaking the dollar. It's just a flat 7%. And that's just a salary issue.
Does that include the extra benefits that go along?
That's everything. I mean, I would presume that this, I'm looking at this, is this put up for this year's compensation package, right? That's what I'm looking at. So what I would assume that based on the salaries, the rest of the stuff just automatically pencils in. I mean, you know, the insurance and the FICA and the PERS and all that stuff. So all based on salary, so.
Well, no, health insurance and PERS aren't based on salary. They're based on classification, and health insurance is based on dependents.
I would like you to teach a class on finances for us, would you please?
I was just correcting you.
I mean,
you,
yeah, I don't mind.
Okay, you know, that's good.
But I'm really getting tired of hearing from you instead of the finance director.
Okay, so.
Now, do you want to speak to that?
Do you want to make that into a motion? We can.
Yeah. I'm going to make a motion that the city manager's salary run 7%, if you want to include the benefits to your wording, above the highest paid department heads.
I just tried to get a motion a second, then we can discuss it.
Yeah, sorry.
I'll second that.
Okay.
The problem with that is he sets the next underling's wages. And if he wanted to raise, he'd just raise the next guy up, and he's got to raise himself.
No, because I think we have there's
a step system.
There's a step system.
He can't go above the step system unless he comes back to us.
For all employees, there's a step system. I mean, includes department heads. At least there was one when I was working.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not thinking it's working this time. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you look at your chart there. But according to this, according to page 39 of the budget, he's getting a raise. I mean, he was making in this one $12,157, and now he's up to $13,711. I mean, that's, you know, that's.
What do you look at the dollar per hour or something? What? Let me see here.
Salary and wages goes right across. This is what it is.
Okay, so this over here, let's see if it's the same numbers.
The city manager was not on a step. He got a flat amount that he's been getting for the last 3 years.
No, he gave himself a raise along with
the I know but that, but I'm saying he's not on a step
right.
Like the rest of us are.
Like the rest of the employees.
Okay, so if the council sets his salary individually, the rest of them, I haven't seen a personnel compensation beyond, I mean, to look at the steps, but.
Well, I was addressing
six,
you were talking
ago.
About the other employees under Jerry.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking
they're
about.
They're on a step.
Right. Yeah, they're on a step. Yeah. That's what I was trying to answer. Or my.
So his salary would adjust by their step. It wouldn't be, he couldn't arbitrarily go out and award himself more money, but we would have to. I mean, if he wanted to go beyond the 7%, he'd have to come back to us. Don't you think?
Well, I'm wondering how we have people making more money than him if there was a step.
Because in the last administration, you remember that we decided to start all new employees at a lower pay scale, and some of them included making less money than the people who were working here at that time. We started the police chief at a much less pay scale than what I was making when I retired. We started this city manager at a much less pay scale.
Yeah.
We reduced all new hires. I'm trying to get a handle on the payroll costs to the point that we kind of penalized the city manager. Because if he's not on a step range like the rest of the employees, he just sits there because we decide to give him more money, you know, to give him a raise, which he hasn't asked for in the last 2.5 years. Beyond that 2% he did, I think.
I think Councilor Egbert, Chad and I just talked, makes a legitimate point, is that while I wouldn't, it does create an opportunity that if I brought a department head on and hired them at the highest possible step, that could then push that 7% and give me an. It just creates what I believe to me kind of a built-in possibility of being accused of a conflict of interest,
sure.
Whether it exists or not. If you see what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Hey, look at the treasurer of the state of Oregon makes $82,000.
Makes $126,000 a year.
The treasurer, not the treasurer.
Treasurer.
His employees make make all the way. The highest paid employee in the Treasury Department makes $300,000, $320-some thousand. It's a treasurer. All of the governor makes 93 or 96, too, and then it goes down from there. 82,000 is the next one, 77,000, 78,000, 77,000, 72,000 is the heads of state here in Oregon. But they have underlings in all the branches that make more money than the elected officials. And the little caveat at the bottom says, if you want to make money, don't get elected.
He's not an elected official.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay.
Probably
you're talking apples and oranges.
Well, do you agree he should be paid higher than the department heads? I'm just asking your opinion.
Well, I don't know. I'm looking at the state level and thinking that that's not necessarily the case. But you know, at this rate, I'm thinking that he probably is. I don't have the folder for what we're giving the next highest person.
Just go by this that we got, you know, in the budget package.
So are you going by the grand total, where it says grand total?
No,
I'm
all I have is...
I'm looking out here just at the salary range. Out here, this one.
Oh, okay.
That's just the salary. And I say, except for... And PERS is based on 6%. So that's based on... Excuse me. I don't know about... And I think the health is, like everything else, is flat. It's whatever the employee pays, he pays. That's who's in the same program. I don't know.
If you
just go into the salary, and this I think would be in the 15-16 budget. This is the 15-16, I think.
That's
correct. Okay. So he's at 83.4, and the chief, I don't want to point fingers at you, chief, because you're well worth it. I know. I was.
Jeez. I don't know where this is going.
No.
That was where at one of the last meetings, I think it was two meetings ago, I was talking about 59%. If somebody makes 85, it costs 125, the total number on there was 100, and I don't have my sheet with me tonight. But just in the budget this year, when I ran these numbers off, health benefits for Jerry went up $2,277. Medicare went up $43. PERS went up $1,554. Fringe benefits went up $58. Salary, $1,365. Social Security went up $183. State unemployment, $460. And workman's comp went up $101. That's a total of $5,839 without even getting a raise. That's just the cost that it costs to have Jerry working. Then there was traveling and materials in the budget, because you was elected at another position that you was going to travel. We had $1,926 figured in more for that. So your increase for just the year without the raise is $7,765 that's going to cost the taxpayer, which came out about $647 a month. So
just for breathing.
That's real. You know, I mean, I'm not saying you're not worth the raise, Jerry, at all. I'm just saying, what I'm wondering is, where are we going to be at the cap? What is the cap? It isn't sustainable for stuff to keep going up and going up when our increase is only 3% a year. It's not based on in the budget notes where it was the total for the whole city. You know, when you're looking at, when pretty soon to give somebody $60,000 is costing $60,000 additional.
Well, that's it's just I have a hard time with, you know, asking somebody to run a business and paying less than the employees that he's supervising.
Why don't we consider what Tom's motion was, that we do the 7% higher than the highest paid department head right now, and then we set a step system for the city manager?
Well, right now, if you consider total wages and benefits, Jerry is the highest paid employee.
I'm not talking about the benefits.
Yeah, you're talking about
Medicare and all that.
I call it
about salary.
I know, but the taxpayer has to pay the benefits.
I understand that, but we're talking about salary. Is what I'm just saying, there's a place to start. Maybe we should just start there. Plug it at 7% and then create a step system that he has to go by, he has to qualify, or the reviews have to do that, and then we can go from there, and then we don't have to have this every year. If he qualifies into the step system and he performs well, then the next step is. Seems like that'd be a logical way to start this whole system.
Can anybody put a dollar amount on that?
Dollar amount on what?
What 10% is?
7%. Hey,
Matthew. What's 7% of 87,000?
What is the top one?
What is the
Jerry's here?
Tom, you want to check up here before you're there. Get an answer. You have any more input, Jerry?
And I'm not necessarily, that's just for purposes of discussion.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, well, I want to know where that goes, yeah.
The salary would be $91,549, 7% higher than the highest paid employee.
And cap it.
And what about the hazard pay that you talked to us about for police officers?
It's not enough.
What? It's not enough, yeah, I agree with you for that. But do you consider that when you're comparing him to the city manager?
Who, the police chief?
Yeah. You consider that we pay him hazard pay.
Well, in a sense, you're going to pay Jerry hazard pay too, because he's going to fall into the line of a lawsuit, just like you are. You need to get twice as much as you're getting now. But he's going to be part of a lawsuit. The city, the council. So yes, that's hazard.
Well, what concerns me is the message we're sending to the rest of the people that are working is, if we give them a 3% increase and we give the head guy 7%.
I just wanted to throw out a couple numbers, because when I ran for this office, I did it because I was tired of seeing our government spend our kids and our grandkids into oblivion and just... And I haven't really been able to do anything. I thought at the local level I could make a difference. Hasn't worked out that way. But in 2012-13, the general fund payroll was 91% of the property taxes collected. In 2015 and 16, it's 94.8%. How long do you think we can sustain that trajectory? I mean, sometime you have to give something to the taxpayer. Can you bring something to the table that says, I actually wanted to give Jerry a bonus instead of a raise. I wanted to give him a bonus on putting together the volunteer fire department. And I was told I couldn't do that. Is that true? That we can't do that?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, it's a contract provision, so you can, if you want to amend the contract, create a bonus process for it, and that's certainly something that can be done.
Okay, well, that is something that I would like to do. That's what we did with our employees. Our employees knew that if they saved us some money or brought in additional revenue, that they were going to get a bonus. If they made the company money, they got a bonus. And There is no cost savings now to the volunteer fire department, but it was a heavy lift. So I would like to consider a bonus for that. However, the cost savings doesn't come till next year. So next year, I think we could, then you can come back and say, we saved the taxpayer $100,000, $200,000 on a fire department from the efforts of the city manager, then you can justify it.
And I would even add that it just doesn't come with cost savings, because cost savings, there's potential for cost savings for a myriad of different things here at the city, with the wastewater treatment plant project, the volunteer fire district, there's things that come up, but also growth. If we can increase revenue through additional taxpayers,
and foster an environment for companies and developers to start building, that too should be factored into that. If there's a way to add that into it, because when you're in a trajectory like that, you can either cut to try to make ends meet or you can grow. And for a city, I think growing is the way we need to try to go. I mean, we've got a developer already, I know, involved wanting to develop across from the golf course up there. And we've always talked about other potentials for growth. That's what I want to see. I want to see growth. I want to see existing companies grow here instead of buying manufacturing facilities in Wilbur and moving millions of dollars of manufacturing jobs out of town. And that's what I'm looking for, growth.
That's what I'm looking for too, and we have to make an environment where people want to be here. And taxing the people and not providing them any services is not going to make that environment. I went out and talked to a lot of people in the past 2 weeks.
Can we discuss the salary situation, and we can discuss this other issue at a later time? I see some merit in it, but I'd like to get the salary issue.
How much of a salary increase minimum that you would have to be the highest paid? If that makes sense, what I'm asking. Power below you are the police chief, or Dan, you know what that.
You're up again.
I can't see that GD. Sorry. I should have been prepared. Hey, why don't you go ahead and keep it? I can't read it right anyway. Somebody wrote it real small.
.3% would make him even with the highest pay. So anything above that would.
So what would 3.2% be?
That would put him at 85,560.
2.3.
3.3.
3.3.
See,
Aaron's going to.
Jerry, what would you like to see? What do you think is fair?
Because it's not on this paperwork, but here a couple meetings ago, you had some high.
Actually, I personally love the idea of performance-related bonus. It's in my DNA to do that, so that's great. But I would like to get a salary base where I am kind of at an 87, I think, is a fair number. If you're 85, 563, 87 is a fair and reasonable number. And then from then on, you'll be able to look at. I agree. I'm all for that. Annual basis, but don't discount the performance related to how much the risk management side goes into in terms of saving crises. That's the only other thing I'd say is that, yeah, I believe in this next year, if everything goes well, I'm going to be at a $600,000 a year annual salary. That's exciting.
That'd be great.
I
would be.
Just like the guy at the college.
So I'm okay with that. I just think, just personally, I think 87 is fair. It creates the distance between me and the others. And then from here forward, I'd love to have continuing dialogue in terms of if this is what our net tax was this year, and this is what the net tax rate, our income, and I allude that in my budget message, is that the mechanism for doing that is seeing where you are in your ending cash. This year's ending cash was about 88,000 greater than it was the year before. So I think if we just split that 50-50, I'm happy.
Mr. Mayor, I will withdraw my second if Tom was to redo his motion.
We just readjusted
the budget. I'm
grateful. Be honest. I'm glad Scott brought me here for a reason. I'm filling that.
I don't want to be an overgreedy. Even though my counterparts make about $130,000 a year for a city this size, I'm perfectly fine.
That statement there just really grates on me, because the whole fact of the matter is that we don't want to do business like government's been doing business.
Absolutely.
That's why we're $18 trillion in debt as a country.
And that's why I'm not screaming.
Huh?
That's why I'm not screaming. That's why I'm not asking for that, because I know that's not right. But I also know my counterparts in the private sector, as you wanted to talk about, is about $146,000 a year. We can't do that either. So I'm happy at 87 with the bonus going into future years. It'd be great.
We could discuss that, yeah.
Okay.
Motion?
We're going to withdraw my motion.
Okay.
Okay. Now I'll make a motion.
All right.
We adjust the city manager's salary to $87,000.
Second.
You.
There's been a motion to adjust the city manager's salary to $87,000 a year. And second, is there any more discussion? Seeing none, go. You guys? Oh, I thought, okay.
That's total. I mean, this is showing an increase
in salary.
I mean,
salary.
No, but that is. We had something in the budget to start with, and this is.
This is not above that.
This is setting that aside and doing
exactly.
That.
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Good question. I wouldn't do that. Even though I did give
we might.
Any more discussion? Go ahead and vote.
Councillor Anderson?
No.
Councillor Lazier?
Yes. Aye.
Councillor Stone?
Aye.
Councillor Egbert?
Aye.
Councillor Boggs?
Aye.
Councillor Meyer?
No.
Mayor McKnight?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, on the wastewater facility disinfection system.
There was a second part of this in regards to an admin car. Did you want to address that?
I just threw that out as a suggestion. It's been talked about for never. It's not necessarily a great benefit for me, but it's an alternative to getting a wage.
Put that on the next agenda? You guys want that on the agenda?
If you're interested in considering a proposal, I'm happy to bring it. But if you're not, if the consensus of the council is you aren't open to that.
Well, if you don't want to discuss it tonight, just answer me maybe a couple questions. Is when I was a department head, I got a monthly stipend, $275 a month. Mm-hmm. Right? Vicki, our department heads all got $275 a month to use. You know, their personal vehicles for any city business or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Is that still in existence?
Hasn't been for a long
time. Nobody gets that?
No.
Okay. When I started driving a city car, I turned mine back in. I couldn't take it because I just used the city vehicle.
Right. And my point to you is that it could conceivably be that if I expensed every mile I use my vehicle for, if I did so, it would be around $250 to $400 a month. And that's money you give that you don't really get anything for. And the best alternative then is to provide a car that's a city admin car that everybody uses, but it's principally assigned to me, just like the fire chief and police chief. But it is an asset that stays with the city, whether I leave or not, and it just goes to the next person, and you're not just giving that to $150 to $300 a month.
Well, the reason I asked you, and I don't know why you, but I happened to talk to the chief today about this matter a little bit, and you know they have the red Taurus there available, mm-hmm. And I don't know why you can't just assume use of that. The way it's being used now is if somebody else needed it for whatever purpose, do the same thing you're doing. Just make use of that car that we already own, mm-hmm. And it might need a TLC. Check with the chief, sit down, talk to him about it, see how much he can part with it if it's an issue, or and then bring it back to us.
Why don't we just put it on the agenda for next time? Deal with that.
Yeah.
That way you can come back with something.
Sure. Don't we have a police car?
I got some good.
That works too. Whatever you want.
I got some good. That'll give you something to come back to.
Okay. We're going to be getting a fire. We're getting a fire truck here pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, you know my bicycle idea.
I know.
Okay.
Chief, you still get that electric bike?
Well, I was just. I have a question for the attorney. One of the things that you said when you were talking about this was that you would take, that you would.
you were going to take money out of the different reserve funds. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that's legal, is it?
Take money out of the different reserve funds.
Yeah, like he would, for the city manager car, he would like take money out of the police reserve fund or the fire reserve fund or...
No, I'm sorry. Reserve. Sorry. No, it'd be dispersed the way my salary is. So whatever, if, I don't know, 50% of my salary comes from the general fund, then the general fund would pay 50% of the amount. Water, whatever the equipment reserve funds are, but it wouldn't come from police because that's already the general fund.
Okay. So the equipment reserve funds, can you do that? Can you do that?
So, I think there's two issues here. The first issue is, it's perfectly appropriate to distinguish the amount of the payment of the benefit between the different funds for the purposes of determining, you know, how much should. So, you know, X percent of Jerry's time is devoted to water issues, so the water fund will pay X percent of that cost. That's absolutely appropriate. The second issue is, well, how does that money then actually get spent? And the money, if it's in reserve right now, would have to be moved from reserve to an actual fund to make the payment.
Right.
But what I think Jerry's saying is that, you know, he would take that from reserve, move it to the whatever, the, you know, water fund, for example, and then actually make the payment. And you can take money out of reserves, but you've got to do that procedural step. You can't just pay it from reserves. That's what your question
is. So the short answer is yes, it's legal.
If you want a lawyer to give a short answer.
Yes, it is, yes. Right?
That's a sort of a joke, a punchline.
Yes. I thought when we talked about this last year or the year before about that reserve funds are set aside for a specific purpose and they're not like other funds. You need to have a resolution in order to take, you actually need to close the fund and say we are not going to use this fund for this purpose anymore. And so we...
So when you set aside reserves, there's a process that you follow to move the money from reserves. And depending on what you do, this process will take an amendment to the budget. So what you're doing is you're amending the budget to say, okay, we are increasing the personnel cost by X amount, and we're distributing the personnel cost through these different funds. So depending on exactly how you're talking about doing that, we'll have to follow the proper procedures.
And Dan can answer that when we make the report.
No, I don't think, because you're talking about personnel costs. I'm talking about taking, like, the wastewater equipment reserve fund. Can you take the money from the wastewater equipment reserve fund and take $5,000 and say, we're going to use this money for the city manager's car?
Okay, so I'm sorry. Now I'm tracking what you're asking. So there are certain restrictions on when a reserve fund is created, for what purpose it was created, and then how you can spend those monies. So what we're going to have to do, assuming that you decide to move forward with this proposal, is determine where that money is going to come from based on how it's broken up, as Jerry was saying before, and then what money is available from those funds to pay that. So if you have set a reserve fund for the example, the purchase of a new vehicle for the police department, you don't necessarily say, okay, we're going to pull that out and use that on a vehicle for the city manager. So there are those, and I'm not familiar enough with your budget to say, here's how it would work, you know, but we'll have to go through that, and Dan will go through that and say, here's how we would pay for it. And then that will take an amendment to the budget to say, okay, here's how we're going to pay for these personnel costs. So,
all righty. Well, on the wastewater facility.
City Council, Mayor McKnight, Brian Elliott, utility superintendent.
Oh, where's your city shirt? That one hurts the eye.
Hey, that's nice. That's nice.
Would you lower down a little bit so I can see?
Yeah, stand tall. You want a step stool?
Yeah. Maybe sit down in a chair behind the podium.
Staff is seeking approval to install the sodium hypochlorite solution for the disinfectant process. Currently, we're using the chlorine gas disinfectant process. Little history on this. Basically, back in 2013 is when we did the cost analysis between on-site generation, sodium hypochlorite, and the chlorine gas. The chlorine gas from basically back in 2008, we used to purchase 2,000-pound cylinders. Because of the fire marshal restrictions, they've limited us to where we could only have 1,500 pounds on hand instead of 2,500. We used to pay $550 for 2,000 pounds plus shipping handling. So, and currently, it ranges anywhere from $2,200 to $4,100 for a short fill, which is 1,200 pounds. And that's because of the restrictions as far as the fire marshal.
And that lasts about how long?
About 3 weeks.
Yeah, okay.
About 3 weeks. So the expense is really exploded the last several years, plus the degree of hazard safety with the chlorine gas. The sodium hypochlorite system is something that we will use and has been identified in the wastewater facility plan. We will be using that with the new facility, and it is being designed so we can just incorporate it right into the new facility.
Okay. Is any of this being paid back from the construction budget for the plant?
It's part of the original.
It is part of the original, but I'll let Dan answer that question.
Or do we have to wait for the pre-design on the plant?
So what was the question exactly?
Well, if we're going to be reimbursed for this through the loan process.
As long as it was part of the plan for the upgrade, then yes, we will.
I thought we budgeted this last year.
We did. We did do that in anticipating.
Okay, so actually we did. Mm-hmm. So. But we put it on hold because of the value analysis. We want to make sure that we're going forward with the right
direction. Sure.
Exactly. And then we put it on hold again because we wanted to, whoever was selected for the pre-design, we wanted the same engineer firm to do the design on the sodium hypochlorite. So
do you know if Dyer's engineering this into the system then for sure?
Yes.
Okay.
And a lot of the plumbing and so forth right now will be this existing plumbing that we'll use with this system with the new facility.
So how dangerous is this stuff?
Not as nearly as dangerous as chlorine gas.
Good. That's what I was wondering. It's supposed to be.
The gas is bad.
You don't
want
to tour anything.
You're going to remodel anyway, don't you?
Mix natural gas and chlorine gas.
I move to approve the wastewater facility.
I say
disinfection.
Let me finish.
Disinfection. Damn, I'm having a hard time saying that.
Disinfection system. I second.
It's been moved and seconded.
Can you say that again? I just don't hear you saying it. Is there more discussion?
I was just trying to read it.
Go ahead and vote.
Councillor Anderson.
Aye.
Councillor Lazier.
Aye.
Councillor Stone.
Aye.
Councillor Egbert.
Aye.
Councillor Boggs.
Aye.
Councillor Meyer.
Aye.
Mayor McKnight.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Next time, wear a
beautiful shirt.
Wear green.
Tomorrow.
Flexible service maintenance agreement.
I guess we're calling for Vicki.
So this is a new flexible service maintenance agreement with ODOT. The one we're under right now is going to expire in September. It's a 4-year agreement. The one they proposed before you tonight is a 10-year agreement. It's not something that we've used. I'm not sure we've used it at all. But I talked to Aaron, and he does feel like it's a good thing to have in place in case a need arises. We've been asked by ODOT to do some work out on the freeway, and we didn't do it. It was a pretty high risk for our employees, and we decided we didn't want them out there. So we can agree to help them out or not agree. I mean, you don't have to. There's nothing that you have to.
Does anybody remember when we approved this 4 years ago? We did an agreement. Does anybody remember why we approved it?
Seems like that at that time we talked about that we had used it.
They were grinding
the
streets.
They came in and did some grinding and
they might have used it back then. We haven't used it. I don't think this one. This
right.
One. Yes.
But at that time, like the 4 years ago, I mean, that was kind of the caveat. It was that we had used it. They had come in, and when they had equipment in the area, they would come in and grind up. Patch the do patches in the asphalt. So So it had been used, and I kind of wonder, I mean, we got streets that need it right now. Why do we haven't got them back in here?
Well, you have to pay for it, so.
Well, but there was some kind of a trade-off. I mean, we were doing something for them at the time. I mean, sweeping central or doing something.
Yeah, we were sweeping central.
That we got credit for. Well,
that's interesting.
Yeah, because they own.
Is that the same thing? I don't think that's the same thing. I'm not aware of
it. I remember Dan talking about that we had money from the state.
We did some work by the hour, and they gave us monetary credit.
Yeah, but that doesn't sound like this contract.
I think it may be, but that could be exchange funds that you're talking about.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. We're just talking to Chad. You know, the pros for this is what Councilor Egbert talked about. You have an on-call. You don't always have to. You can barter with the state. The other pro to it is that we don't have to go out to bid. We don't have to go out to contract. It's just picking up the phone and negotiating that system, whether you have, you know, if we had money budgeted for a certain project, they could do it cheaper than we could, then we'd do some sort of exchange. The cons are, I really don't know what the cons would be.
Availability. They're always somewhere else.
Right.
You know, the MoDOT guy.
but there's no fiscal requirement, you know, to engage it.
Also, $500,000 in liability insurance is not anything for that kind of work. That's not sufficient.
Is this something we want to do as a staff? I mean, is this something you want, or did they bring this to us? And
they brought it to us. Okay. I don't know originally if they brought it to us.
Are you recommending approval?
Aaron wants to do it. Let's just put it that way.
Aaron wants to do it.
He's the person.
He's not seeing any harm in having it, and it could be helpful at some point in time.
But each party is kind of obligating $375,000 if over the next 10 years if it should be needed.
Right, but you don't have to.
But if you don't use it, you don't.
I don't like
10-year
contracts.
That's what I'm worried about. That's what's here to me. It's like signing up for DirecTV.
Well, can we make a counter and say we'll do it, but we only want to do it for 5? Or we have to do it for 10?
We can try. I don't know what they'll say.
Totally concerned.
You want to try to find out? Is there a motion? You want to try?
I move that we approve it for 5 years, not for 10.
I second.
Is Aaron for just central, or is he for out on the freeway here?
The freeway belongs to ODOT, so they have asked us to go out on the freeway sometime this last year. We decided not to send our people out there.
So is that what ODOT has, is $500,000 insurance? So what if they're doing a project and there's an accident, and we use their $500,000, but it's a $2 million claim? I
still
think that's enough money for insurance.
Especially on the freeway, if we ever do agree to do it.
Well, it's them doing a job and there'd be some kind of an accident, and the city's going to end up picking up the slack.
Do you have any, Chad?
Can we address that?
Just reading through the agreement, the agreement calls for defense and indemnification by the other party. So if the state's doing the work and they cause damage to a third party, they are obligated to defend and indemnify you. The reason that you have insurance in contracts is to make sure that the other party can actually pay whatever damages occur. So when we enter into a contract with a private contractor, we want to make sure that they actually have $2 million in insurance in case we get that $2 million claim, that they can actually afford to pay it and we're not stuck. I think with the state, there's probably minimal risk that, you know, they have money available to pay those claims even if they only have $500,000 insurance. It's not like contracting with another private entity. So from a risk management perspective, I don't think that that is a very big issue. Obviously, we'd like to see insurance levels, and frankly, at $2 million, or as high as we can get, if the state's unwilling to do that, and frankly, I'm not even sure the state may be partially self-insured. So in those situations, they're just managing that risk themselves. So, you know, really what this agreement is, as I understand it, is we're setting up an agreement to say, we can use you, you can use us, we can say no, they can say no. And if in fact we decide we want them to do work, we don't have to enter into a completely separate IGA because we have this IGA in place now. And it just gives us the opportunity to do that if in fact we want to do that. If they ask us to do some work and we don't think we want to do it, we have the right to say no under the agreement and we don't have to do it. You know, if we don't have this in place, what it means is that if we decide we want ODOT to do some work for us, then we have to enter into that separate IGA and bring it to you for approval, as opposed to just having this sort of in place. And, you know, that's the policy goal for you guys.
It's a better mechanism or tool to use.
Well, I think the state thinks it's a better mechanism or tool because they also have their own approval process. Sure. So, you know, it makes it easier for them to do it. No. For cities, you know, sometimes cities like that individual approval
in theory,
process.
In theory, exactly. So there's a motion to approve as is, but except for 5 years instead of 10. Was there a second?
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to, Debbie just whispered in my ear from across the room.
Wow.
the previous contract was for 4 years. So 5 years, I wouldn't deem unreasonable.
No more discussion. Go ahead and vote.
Councillor Anderson.
Aye.
Councillor Lazier.
Aye.
Councillor Stone.
Aye.
Councillor Egbert.
Aye.
Councillor Boggs.
Aye.
Councillor Meyer.
Aye.
Mayor McKnight.
Aye.
Motion carries.
On the Douglas County Planning Services contract. You again.
Okay, so for the past several years, we've been contracting a planner from Portland area, Carol Connell. And she's done a great job for us, but as we move forward and things are starting to, permits are picking up, we have some opportunities for growth, and Jerry and I both would like to have a planner sitting at our table more often when we're discussing those things. So that being said, Carol is going to be not with us after next week, and we're contracting with Douglas County. That came up through your budget, through the budget process. I think we discussed it. So I think maybe I'll just let Keith.
Can I add to it,
sure.
Please? This was really forcefully my idea or my concept. The difficulty I had was having council meetings where Vicki had to come present something that our paid professional planner should have been doing. And we've had moments at planning commissions, and there have been very critical issues throughout this year in which I couldn't get our planner available. Just for whatever reason, we couldn't connect, and I couldn't get the answers we needed for some real important things. The new development we're talking about right now that you've seen that's still moving forward, the county's been at the table. They aren't even in a contract with this. I also want to point out that I made every attempt to seek private sector input first. No offense, Keith, but you know, if I could have found a private sector qualified IACP, American Institute Certified Planners, person to provide these services, I would. After review of all the possibilities, Douglas County, and we interviewed Keith Kubik, we spent time with him, is significantly far and away the most qualified to get us through the things we want to do this year. We want to do a mixed-use zoning. Keith has already got a staff lined up and ready to move on it. We want to do a UGB exchange. He's been involved from the very beginning. The Duke waterline extension and annexation, he helped us through all of that. We are on the forefront of hopefully acquiring a grant to master plan those lands south of Duke all the way to the exit 135, and he has his staff prepared and engaged to help get us. At this point in time, for this particular year, there isn't any agency, entity, or even individual more qualified to get us through this year
than Keith Kubik and his staff. And so I wanted to just throw out that sales pitch.
Keith, do you want to come up and speak?
How much did we budget for this?
We budgeted 50.
50,000?
Yeah.
Because I see in here that there's a 40,000 minimum fee, so.
Right, that's the base fee for basic ongoing planning, all the stuff. Okay. We budgeted extra money because of the UGB expansion and the mixed use for 50 to cover those additional costs.
So did
sorry, Vicki. This is your.
Sorry.
Yeah, would you?
Did I read it correctly that if you go from above half time that you have to go to three quarter time, like a half full time position to a three quarter time position?
Oh, you mean if our work demand creates it, they're going to want us to pay for the three quarter?
Right.
I think we discussed that. I don't remember if that's correct. He's here.
That's right here.
He's right there. You can answer that question.
Yes. Quite frankly, we don't have to do anything. Keith isn't going to make us do anything.
Not after that speech you gave.
Just stuff that we're saying we're withdrawing.
Good evening. I'm Keith Kubik, County Planning Director, and we also administer City Assistance Program. We provide city planning services to Myrtle Creek and Winston, and potentially this upcoming year to Sutherland. The answer to that is up to 0.75.
Oh, okay.
It's variable. It would be just for the level of service. We started out in about 2008 when things were really active with Myrtle Creek and Winston, and we actually provided 0.75 of service, and it's gone down to a half FTE. The half to FTE is really a maintenance number, and the billing is. The concept is about a half FTE if you look at the entire cost of a experienced planner. About the $50,000 is about salary plus all benefits. That's about half of the planner. In that particular case, we share our planners. We are providing service to, this could be the third city. And so the cost could be variable, but to maintain this program, it's not an on-call or an as-needed program. It is staffing. And so the $40,000 minimum in the contract is saying, if things are slow, we're still going to be here. We're going to be providing office hours. We're going to be providing other things. One of the things in the contract we think is very important, and when we've worked with our other two cities, as we, based on the experience of our planning staff and our experience with other cities, we start working with the city codes, and we have often identified streamlining, shortcuts, effectiveness changes that we can recommend, that the council can consider, the manager can consider, and so in our contract it provides for us to do that. So if it were happened to be a slower time, it would be a very positive time, and that's what's happened in Myrtle Creek and Winston. We've actually updated their codes to make them more effective and more efficient as we've gone through when there's less land use action at that minimum level of funding. If you want, I know you've got a long meeting. You've had a lot going on this evening. I can give you some highlights of the contract. The city made their inquiry in February. We talked, we did a negotiation, we developed a draft agreement, we talked to the county commissioners. If you approve this tonight, the county commissioners approve the intergovernmental agreement on June 10th. So it has been approved by the county. It's included in my budget. The revenue expectation is on our budget. We are using existing staff. The contract provides for us to provide technical and professional services, but it also provides that we will offer managerial and support activities that aren't billed to you. So from that standpoint, we have people that do mapping, we have people that do notices, we have people that do a lot of the busy work things that make our planners efficient. Part of that comes with the package. And then our managerial or more expert staff, we don't manage the city, we manage the program, but when the city manager calls and says, I'd like to talk about a policy issue or a statewide planning issue that's very important to the county, he has the depth of our staff to assist him. That's the managerial component. We do supervision of the staff planner in consultation with the city, because they're still our employee, but they're contracted with you. And the kind of feedback that your city manager's given me about your contract service are things that if he provided me that feedback, we'd make sure that was fixed. And we would not have that kind of frustration about the service that we provided. With that, just a couple of other things. So I think the additional support is important. It's up to 3/4 of a person if necessary. It also provides the contract would start July 1st. The contract may be terminated on 60 days written notice by either party. If it doesn't work, it doesn't feel right. If you just boomed and busted and said, well, we want to hire 2 planners on our staff, this contract wouldn't be sufficient. And so that opportunity would exist. We bill quarterly, and we would do that at the beginning of the quarter. Then we provide document service, and then we bill for the second, third, and fourth quarter. There is an indemnification. It says if the county does something that's neglectful or inappropriate, the county will cover that. If the city in the planning process does something that's neglectful or inappropriate, the city covers their employees on that issue. And so you're held harmless on any error or mistake that the county might make that you had a tort claim on, for as an example. Let's see. This is a joint agreement, and it may be extended for successive years. And as I've indicated, I think it was 2007-08 that we initiated our contracts with the two cities. When we did that, I was of the mind that Winston would be growing a little faster and would probably want to hire back their own planner after 3 to 5 years, and it hasn't happened that way. It's been slower, so we've continued the service. It also provides that there can be some clarification and amendment of the agreement through a joint memorandum of understanding between the city manager and the county planning director. The reason why I'm designated that is that in that role is that I delegate that authority by the board, and we don't have a county manager, so certain department heads serve that part of that function. That's basically the agreement. The one other thing that I'd say is, in addition to the support staff, I have with me this evening Lisa Hawley, who has been active. She has served as both the Myrtle Creek and Winston planner for about the last 5 or 6 years with Winston. Her experience is a bachelor's in geography from the University of Oregon. She's an avid duck fan. She's also an avid lion. And so she's really active in her Lions Club. She's been with the county for 25 years. Full confidence in her ability to do the administration part, to do the client contact, the pre-application conferences, and then I would have backup and support with myself and other staff members. So my idea is to bring Lisa in because of her knowledge and experience at the other two cities. I think it would be a quicker transition. We do have 2 other people that are doing city assistance, but I don't want you to start with a novice or an amateur. I want you to start with somebody that's highly experienced. That's it.
Keith, how do you separate county and city since our city's about divided in thirds here between all the entities that own our city? When you're putting in infrastructure that's through the city that may be benefiting the county down the road or something, and you're like the urban growth swap stuff where most of that lands county, how do you keep track of the hours that you're spending on county time and city time?
We will, and that's a good question. There is a component of activities that will be county. If they generate with us, if we're administering them, or if we're representing the county in our role, in a coordination role, it would be not billed. In that particular case, it would not be work that our city assistance planner would be doing. It would be another member of our staff. So there would really be a distinction because you have 2 different staff members involved. The city assistance planner keeps good track of their time, and that's what we document towards the city. Also, while that city assistance planner is working for the city, their accountability is through and to the city manager. Policy questions and those kinds of things, interpreting questions, first go to the city manager, or in the case, the public works director or whoever, however the chain of command might exist at the city.
Does this help us with using her for getting grants? you know, through the county programs and the state programs?
Typically, a grantsmanship role is not in the contract, but if it were a land use related project, it could be. It'd have to be a land use related, though. I mean, or we do a slight adjustment to the agreement between the city manager and the planning director through a memorandum of understanding.
Is there any more questions for Keith? Thank you very much.
How long have you been at the county, Keith?
I have been with Douglas County 44 years.
Yeah.
It's been a wonderful marriage and a great career.
I move to approve the contract.
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded to approve the contract with Douglas County Planning Services as presented. Any more discussion? Go ahead and vote.
Councilor Anderson?
Aye.
Councilor Lazier?
Aye.
Councilor Stone?
Aye.
Councilor Egbert?
Aye.
Councilor Boggs?
Aye.
Councilor Meyer?
Aye.
Mayor McKnight?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Me? On the report, DEQ financing update. Yay. Finance director.
I wanted to give you a brief update of where we're at with the best finance. We're still kind of stuck in this wetlands delineation process, and the report has been finished by our the contractor we hired, and it is now at the Department of State Lands, and they're reviewing it. So that has to be completed before it can all be submitted to DEQ and then go through the rest of the process. And I just wanted to let you know where we're at.
Okay.
How long has it been since, how long has DEQ been requiring public comment to 30 days for a new project?
It was the new one to me. But I honestly don't know. It probably, I could find out, but I don't know for sure.
It's the first thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Well, they did the same thing with the Water Control Board. They were aware, but when they were getting ready to work on the dams, I'm just wondering why our consultant wasn't aware of that.
I talked to Stephanie, the deputy director. All I can tell you is I don't know why.
Who's Stephanie?
She's the deputy director for DEQ.
Oh. Any more questions for Dan?
Is that going to affect our interest rates, you think?
One way or the other, yeah. I doubt they'll stay the same.
Yeah, they're telling us there's a chance they're still going to go down. We don't believe them, but that's what they're telling us.
I thought we were getting locked. Agreed to that.
That's what this whole process was supposed to do, is get us locked in.
This curveball.
Yeah, we didn't know. I don't know, you know, who to blame or how to find out about it.
We're supposed to be locked in December.
Mm-hmm. Does DSL, don't they have a waiting period for their review? The Department of State Lands, I think there is, isn't there? It's like 120 days.
For their environmental review?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For comment?
I think,
do we have to wait for that before the DEQ 30 days?
No. From what I know right now at this moment, I'm sorry, Dan, is that we're all done. We're just waiting for the final rubber stamp on the environmental. And then once the environmental's done, the gentleman whom this has been sitting on his desk for some time tells us there's an additional 30 days public comment review after that, which again I was aware of that, and which is
so it's sitting at DS.
This is not common. We didn't do this with the water plant,
but it's sitting at Department of State Lands right now.
No, it's a DEQ.
Oh, it's past the Department of State Lands.
No, it's not. It is the wetland delineation, which is the last
requirement. Yeah, I was talking about that.
Right, is that Department of State?
The loan application.
Once they sign off on that, then it all goes to DEQ.
Well, you might want to check because there's a period there where there's like a comment period. People can protest and appeal, and it's wonderful in this state because they can just keep appealing forever. And I don't know who your contact is. I don't know who you're speaking with, DSL, but
you might want to find out where it's at, because it could be another 2 months. Who knows?
There's no charge for that either.
Been through that road, isn't it?
We're saving money. We're saving money. All right, so city manager update.
I want to talk about your next council meeting when you were examining legal fees with regards to personnel actions. We're going to have a special executive session at the next council meeting where we're going to take you through and explain some of the detail that we believe you need to understand with regards to a number of personnel actions. So just be patient until your next council meeting. We'll do that. And then I do intend to have on your agenda SDDI is either going to give us, I received an email from Lynn Dean, and I'll put that in terms of a staff report for the SDDI funds to be released. And so I told her July, when the new budget comes about, we'll put this on the agenda. So that'll be on your next agenda as well. And that's really all I have at this time, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. City Council business, remember monthly meeting time is limited. Please ask questions or make statements that are likely to benefit the group. Individual comments and questions that can be handled on a one-to-one basis should be handled outside the meeting. Councilor Anderson.
I got nothing.
Councilor Lozier.
No, too many.
Councilor Stone.
I have a couple things. One, what's happening with the playground equipment? Was we still getting the new playground equipment as to what's going on in the city park?
We're still researching grant opportunities.
Okay, so we're still working on that part of it.
It's not been ordered, no.
How about in the train area, you know, in behind the fence? Mm-hmm. Who's in charge of the weeds that are 4 feet tall in there around the train? And is that a fire hazard for the city to? Because I was set up, they had to mow their yard.
I know, so this weekend. Not this weekend, last weekend, sorry.
Well, I would say we are. I will.
So that's not Bart Marshall's contract?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. That's all I have.
Okay. Council Egbert?
A couple things. This weekend, the Woodstock group did the thing in the park, and it seems like every year that when they go and reserve the park and all of the amenities that go with it, something doesn't happen. This particular weekend, the water in the park was all shut off, so we had to cart water out of the kitchen to go water the dogs. I mean, and last year, I think when the canine group came, the gate down by the tennis courts, they didn't have a key to open that gate or the tennis court gates to do the agility things for the dogs. And, I mean, it's somehow there needs to be a coordination to. For the user groups to be able to have what they really need.
They need to put that down on the sheet when they fill it out and bring it into us.
What usually happens is you'll have this person will do it, this person knows how to do it, but this person's doing it this year and they don't know what questions to ask or how to.
And they could get a checkoff sheet. So
that well, that's something I'm thinking is that maybe there needs to be a checkoff sheet or a communication between the city and the user groups. I mean, that's,
user groups. There's a checkoff sheet on the parks application where they check off. Do they need electricity? Mm-hmm. Do they need water?
There you go. I mean, maybe something like that.
It's already on there.
It's on there.
Is it? Mm-hmm. I haven't done it, so I don't know, but I do know that every year it seems like something. You know, we're chasing something. The other one would be is a contact number where we could contact.
In case something happens?
Yeah, in case you need this, and you know, you need something, you could have somebody to comment on. We have somebody on duty, I think, don't we, somewhere? I mean, you know, somehow we could contact them.
That's a good point.
Call Forrest.
Yeah. I don't know.
She's good all the time.
The other one is, it's a couple of years ago we talked about when Dan was here of putting the driveway all the way around the community building is in activities like this when you have a number of people bringing in and dropping off, setting up vendor booths and so on, they will drive in and around behind the building. Well, then you get four cars in there and the first car can't get out. You know, and if we took that driveway on around, then he would be able to circle that building and
then you'd lose spot for people to set up their booths because you'd have to keep the road clear.
Parking space.
They don't normally have booths at the train side of the community building.
Yeah, you do Blackberry.
No. Not at the community building. On the other side of the sidewalk, maybe, but not right at the community building.
They were clear up to it last year.
Bertha, if you want to come up, can you come up to this?
Bertha Egbert, and I've been on that Blackberry committee since it started in 1989. What we do is when they come in and unload before the festival starts, after it starts, they're not allowed to come through there. So some of them are pulling trailers, and they pull in, and it's really difficult for them to back them back out and go back around unless they just turn around in the grass and go back. That's when they have problems because there's booths set up there. But they're not allowed to use that again once we're in business. I mean, once we're all set up, they can't do that. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
So the point is,
we'll start with a checkoff sheet problem.
Well, it's already done.
I mean, we're already done.
It's but already on there.
If you're interested in having us cost out what it would take to do a drive around,
that's not. We can do a consensus if people are, you guys. Yeah.
I'm in agreement with getting a cost on the day.
Check into it.
That would be.
There's already a checklist, or your group can check in.
Okay.
Checklist.
and we can go over checklist if there's any.
Yeah, there's something we need to add to the checklist. That's an easy fix. So.
Yeah.
Cool.
And the only other thing I had is that a lot of there was talk about the sealing the asphalt was a decision made by the planning commission because they have the transportation in it. It just seems like that would have been something that should have come as a recommendation to the city council, not a, there should have been some, we don't get any minutes from the planning meeting, so we don't have any.
You're saying come here for final approval.
Well, it's something that should have come to us and saying this is what the recommendations, or had the minutes from the planning meeting so we could at least have a foresight what's coming up to us. Now we've got bids going out and there may have been something. Forrest may have had a different idea. Anyway, I just throw that. We don't get the minutes from these things.
They're on the website. And
we should get the minutes.
They're online. They're on the website. You can have them printed out. I bet you Bertha could do that.
They are. It wouldn't be. I mean,
do that anymore because of the problems we have. So.
Is that all you got?
That's it.
Councilor Boggs.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I kind of agree with that. Just even a heads up that we're planning on bidding this overlay or this street or whatever. The Planning Commission recommends that. That way we have a heads up before it even bids. Because we're getting it after it bids, and so there's resources and time spent into that. But I don't know. I mean, it's not a bad idea.
It'd just be nice to understand the reasoning. So when people ask, hey, why'd you pick?
Yeah.
Or whatever. You can say, well, the Planning Commission said this, 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 and you have some little kind of educated background to give them,
It's because they live on this
way. Yeah. So, it's just kind of a. No, sorry, did you not have anything? No. Councilor Meyer.
I have a couple things. You told me that we were going to be looking at the new rates this time. There was a resolution for the wastewater rates.
Mm-hmm. I said I'd give you an update at the next council meeting, and that's what we've done. We did send a notice to the group that once we solidify what our loan and interest rate are, we're going to bring the group together and bring a rate recommendation to council.
Okay, why are we waiting for the financing to be done? Previous to now, we thought we had to do the rates in order to get the financing. So I can't see where the two are linked at all, except in someone's mind, because we asked for 18 months ago, we asked for them to get started. We asked that we could start raising the rates for two reasons, so that the cost to the consumer wouldn't come all the time. It's 18 months later, and what we're going to end up doing is we're going to end up doubling the rates on them, just bang, and it's going to be a rate shock. The other thing was we wanted to start putting money away so we wouldn't have so much debt, so we could be putting that money towards our debt, maybe to pay down Ford's Pond.
Well, okay, we'll accelerate it, but before I move into it, I want to talk to the bond counsel, who was the one that advised us to hold off and find out what his reasoning is. And if there isn't any legitimate reason, if you guys are okay, we'll just get started on it right away.
Bond counsel, who's that?
Oh, some Jim Shannon is his name.
Okay.
What does he do?
He's our legal counsel for issuing the bonds. Is that right, Dan? Was the bond counsel's correct?
We have a 14.9% increase scheduled for next year in our budget for wastewater rates. So how are we going to apportion those? You know, we have nothing. And I know you must have something because we spent over $17,000 on a study up through the end of March. So we should something.
We do have something. And we were ready, again, like I said, to convene the committee. We had a meeting scheduled. And I'll have to talk to him and find out. But if I can get the go-ahead, we'll get started on it right away. Are you guys okay with that?
So you're looking for consensus, and I would
say yes. I just want to make sure you're all on board for that. I mean, it makes sense to do so if we can. And if you're all on board for that.
Yeah, there's some legal reason that you can report back to us and explain why.
Yeah, I mean, very legitimate point. So
are we going to have an issue where Andy was concerned that raising it too much in each year or something when we first started?
That was one of the reasons that bond council said to hold up, because of a certain notice provision in the issuance of the bonds. So I'll find that out.
Because, like Mr. Duncan, you know, a year and a half ago, we were trying to raise it, you know, $5 a month.
The 666. Ooh, I shouldn't say that.
And
I said 666.
Okay, the other thing is, you guys probably saw, I sent a lot of emails to Vicki today about the trail. And the reason I did that, I was trying to figure out what the cost of the trail was. And what inspired me to do that was the people that were in here at the last meeting saying that promises had been made and then promises were not made, and that they wanted to know what was going to be done to mitigate their circumstances. And so I don't think Vic and I ever got on the same page or what I was looking for, but I went back to the minutes of the minutes of November. You can find these in the December packet if you want to look at them. But it says, discussion continued regarding the options for the projects and the city's control in making changes in the design. Adams informed the council there are safety improvements to consider, for instance, the crossing at Wait and See, adding there are different ways to bring the project cost down. Council discussed a proposed bridge and possibly eliminating it from the project.
That's from 2013, right?
Yeah,
right.
I was going to say.
Adams recommended working toward 90% plan milestone, that's for engineering, and halting the project, and the city would have a better estimate for the project, and city staff will be able to look at the fencing issues, and council will have more information and be better able to make a decision. To wait until the 90% design plan is complete, then assess the situation regarding affected neighborhoods. Council will then have a better understanding and will be able to make more informed decisions. Adams will have the information available for the December 16th meeting. That was December of 2013. He was supposed to get back to us. And now we have numbers. I don't understand the numbers. I don't know what they consist of. I don't know really what the city's cost is. I don't know if we, and I can almost guess that we don't have one dime to mitigate the impacts that that's going to be on the neighbors of the project. And
well, let me just say this. Two budgets ago, all the arguing should have been put to bed when I told you it's not going to cost more than $117,000 for this city, and that's what we're staying with. Now, the report that you got back shows that it's only going to be $112,000 and some change. That's the maximum amount this is going to cost the city. Everything else is on ODOT and the project. Now, all the mitigation things, as we've gone through this process, I even wrote a policy and took it to the Parks Advisory Committee to seek how are we going to mitigate, because all these supposed promises were not made by anybody that's here today. And so all I have is he said, she said, they said, we said, and I don't know how to deal with it. So the recommendation that we all agreed upon back then and are continuing with that process is let's get the trail built. And once the trail's built and we can legitimately demonstrate with unconditional confidence that there are mitigation efforts required, then we will budget the resources to do that. And so our position is it's not going to cost more than $117,000 for the city, no matter what, and that's where we're at, and ODOT knows that. We put our foot down. And secondly, any mitigation that's going to happen after the fact, we will have to budget for in future budgets, if and when that happens, and what we know what the money is going to be. We did some initial number crunching in terms of what we thought could be worst case scenario in budget mitigation. Quite frankly, I'm hesitant to say it because I don't want to plant a seed in anybody's mind that there's money available to do it, but it's more than affordable within our budget.
Well,
so,
we have 5,000.
Pardon?
We have 5,000. You said it was 112, and we've got 117 budgeted.
Right, because we're what we did to balance the budget to get the project and trail done is that all the fancy light mechanisms that were budgeted for as a, in terms for safety, we believe there are grants and other ways of getting that done that we can do that are 10 times less expensive than if we went through the ODOT processes. So we believe that that's more than achievable as well once this project is done by using our own staff and just buying the equipment and putting it in.
So the other 5,000, that's where I'm
right.
Where it's, is it's, that going to be our match for the grants that you're trying to get?
It would be, yes, sir.
Yeah.
So I have two problems with this. One is The Parks Committee is an advisory committee, just like the Transportation and Planning Commission are advisory to the council. They don't make the decision. The final decision is made by the council.
You too, correct. I decided to be. That's done.
And so that's one thing. And the other thing is, this council was anticipating being able to make decisions on how the money was spent and whether or not they wanted to take out a bridge or not. These were all things that were promised to be brought back to the council, and now they're brought back, and I still really don't know what the cost of this project is. We don't, okay. None of us do.
Well, again, I'm going to push back a little. That was only if we weren't going to be able to get the trail done under the budgeted amount. We were going to come back and bring options for council to decide on what you want to eliminate and what alterations you needed to make. No eliminations or alterations are required, so there wasn't anything to bring back to council in terms of a promise. There was no promise made to the council that you were going to have a final say-so on the design and layout of it. That's been established by way of the IGA and the ODOT.
Well, there was a promise in these minutes, it's in the minutes, that the council was going to have a final say in the planning, in the mitigation.
Only if there wasn't enough money to finish the trail, if we ran out of money.
But that's not all that the minutes say. The minutes say that we also were going to look at
why don't
fences
we,
and...
I think this is something you need to take
you
up.
You guys need to have... Well, Karen, can you guys meet and discuss this further in detail?
I mean, sure.
Is that okay? I mean, that way you can get your answer. I mean, it seems like she has a different version in her mind what she's reading, and you guys can meet and discuss it. And
my point
if she
is
happy
that
after that, we can take it to the next step. But let's.
It's the design has been put in place and approved.
I understand.
And
what you're
we
saying.
Can't alter that design.
I
the only way
that
we could alter that design is if we run out of money and we had to make those alterations.
I think what she's mainly talking about, and what I remember too, is Scott was going to come back when the 90% design, and it never happened. They never showed back up, and so we've waited a long time for answers, and we never have heard from ODOT. Or, you know, you'd think if they were donating that much money to us, they would have come to the meeting more than once, you know, over the years. So, but as long as we're under budget, that's.
Yeah. I'm just trying to find a solution. Does that work? I mean, would that work to meet, or?
The only problem I have with that is that the attorney advised us not too long ago that you can't go in and pressure staff in a contract or anything like that.
I'm just trying to get your questions answered. That's how I look at it.
Well, the other side of that, I mean, along with that part of it is we are going to approve this thing and then fix the problems later, and the problems would be part of this budget if we fixed them up front. And to me it seems like if we're going to fix or mitigate some problems, we ought to be looking at that as we're building the trail. To go back and just lay this thing all out is kind of like the Comstock. We just went in and did Comstock, then we went back and made the neighbors right. You know, it's. We should be looking at this as we're putting this thing together.
But right, and we've kind of done that, but we don't really know what the problems are. We know what people tell us what they think they're going to be, but we don't know what the problems are until the trail's in and we see the logistics and spatial distances and actual usage of the trail and what the problems are. People are throwing out hypotheticals and saying, well, hey, if this trail comes in, I'm going to have people breaking into our home. Well, okay. That's what they're saying is going to happen, but we don't have any concrete evidence that indeed is. So,
yeah.
But there are some places out there. I walked that trail, and there are some places out there where the houses are very close to the trail.
That's true.
There's
two homes.
Four foot chain link fence that doesn't have a lot of security and other things.
That's in the city's right of way. It's going to have to be moved.
Well, that's just it. The trail basically is already there along the place where the people are complaining. All you're going to do is throw asphalt on top of it. So I can't see why you don't know what the problems with the trail are going to be when it's already there.
Because those problems don't exist, what they're saying. People aren't breaking into their homes right now.
No, but I walked that path too. And there's a house right along the trail that one of the windows is about 12 feet. From the fence, 12 feet.
Mm-hmm.
That would be
yeah.
a problem for me.
And it is one, as I told you, when we walked the trail and we took pictures and we measured and we looked at, that was one that we saw could be a legitimate issue to solve once the trail is in. And we'll move quickly to do that. My position is in agreement with what the Parks Advisory Committee said. Let's get the trail in, and let's look at each and every one of them on a case-by-case basis, but not create a hypothetical problem and spend taxpayer money on something we don't know exists or doesn't exist.
Well, to some extent, you have to anticipate the problems that you can see.
And we've done that.
Okay. That's people's personal property. If it were me, I live along the creek. The trail could very well come up. Can't really come up because there's not room to get it there. But it would be a big deal to me. That would be what I've worked. That's the person's biggest investment is their home.
So,
and I just don't think that we can just ban them.
So you want me just to go put up fences?
No, I just don't think you can tell people that. Well. Promises were made to you before, but we don't have that any of that in writing.
Right.
I was at some of those parks meetings with Rob Corbett, and those people were convinced that they were going to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Taken care of in what way?
That
we just put in a fence because they said they needed one?
The problems would be mitigated, that Rob would work with them.
Right, and we will. Problems will be mitigated. That is an actual fact.
We have to wait and see if there's a problem.
Right.
Can't just assume there's going to be a problem.
How long are you going?
wait and see.
When your window is 12 feet from the trail, you don't have a problem, a privacy problem?
Well, it could be 5 feet. It's 5 feet on the side and 10 in the back from a residential.
Yeah, I mean, that's some people would argue that's not built their house there.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's, you know. So that's where if they're on their own property and the setbacks were made, that's what some of the problems were, I think, was building.
Now, what you do make a very legitimate point. I'm not trying to say your points are illegitimate, but it is at the end of the day your call. If you want us to spend parks and public works funds to go out and put up fences as this thing's being built, we can do that.
No, I don't agree.
We can look at it.
Project. The guy told me one time, I can't fix nothing until it's built.
Right.
And you shouldn't be fixing stuff, but you do have to go back and fix things after things are built. So that's how that's going to be. You're going to have to build it and then see where the problems are and try to correct them.
Right. But if you think otherwise, you're
but to me, it's just like anything. It's like people, you know,
so there's no problems.
Right. You know, what they think, you know, just like enforcing the law. It's like, you know, what you think is right or wrong and what the state of Oregon says the law pertains. You know, there's just a difference in it. So, I mean, like Karen said, these people might, in their mind, think that's wrong, but there might be a legal thing that, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and it's just like, you're just, you know, people always say that. What if that, you know?
We have the county or the planning director.
Yeah, I mean, but they always talk about scenarios that haven't happened in law. I mean, she can tell you that.
Welcome to our city.
Are you gonna decrease their property values by putting that trail in back of their property?
Some people say they might increase.
Well, you know, that's a good question. When I saw the Rails to Trails program, in terms of, they said in 82% of all cases, property values went up as a result of the trail and not gone down.
Well, because of the privacy issue, when the people who bought our house, all the lots were $10,000 to $12,000 higher because they were on the creek, so those property values are going to go down. $10,000 to $12,000 if people bought for privacy.
Well, it might be, but that's been city right away for 50 years.
So where are we going with this? What we need to?
Well, I'm saying if you want to direct me and our staff to go out and forecast problems, budget, and build that in as we build the trail, we'll do it. Our recommendation is to wait, see what the problems are, and do exactly what Councilor Meyer is asking and mitigate whatever that problem is that we created.
Sounds good to me.
I haven't even heard the finishing date of the trail, so I guess
I think we'll get started before the mitigation.
I actually haven't even heard what the total cost is going to be.
$117,000, $112,000
for the city.
I'm talking about the entire cost. The entire cost of the trail. Is it 1,036? Is it 922? Looking back and forth between minutes and what Vicky's given me and the contracts, there are all different kinds of things.
Vicky, what's the number?
I mean, 1,036,000.
Yeah. 1,036,000.
And our total cost is of what? At the end of the day, 112,400?
Well, we don't know exactly, but it will be no more than 117.
Right.
What's my cut?
$10.
That's why I have.
And I hope I wasn't being too argumentative about this.
I just want to see that the people are taken care of.
I agree.
Okay.
Fairly.
The only thing I got, I just want to, you know, Tammy Gann, everybody who involved with the open house at the chamber, that was great. Also, Woolstock, I went down there this weekend, took the kiddos. It's a nice event, you know. Everybody, it's just a very happy, pleasant event, and it's a pretty cool. Kids definitely enjoyed it. So, just kudos to those two things I went to this last week or so. So, other than that, that's all I have. So, public comment. Purpose of public comment is to allow citizens to present information regarding items off the agenda. A time limit of 3 minutes per citizen shall apply. I don't have anything. I see anybody jumping up? So. All right, we're going to be adjourned. Council will take a 5-minute break before going into the workshop.